Good morning. This is Northern Light for Friday, April 19th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
The community of North Creek is crossing their fingers for a state grant to keep their nursing home open.
Where are these residents going to go? Where? Are they going to go to Buffalo? Are they going to go to Westchester? What's going to happen to these families?
An update on Elderwood at North Creek coming up.
We'll take a tour of the shop in the lower Adirondacks that makes all those yellow and brown Adirondack Park signs.
We cut them out of this big sheet of vinyl. Then we weed out all the vinyl. And they reveal the numbers and the border. Then we tape them up and stick them on a sign.
And John Warren checks the trail conditions in the Adirondacks for us this weekend. All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by CECOM Credit Union, serving the financial needs of people throughout northern New York and northwestern Vermont in person, online at CECOM.org and on your smartphone. And the Depot Theater in Westport, inviting all to take a journey without leaving the station. Learn more at DepotTheater.org. And with a gift from you right now on the final morning of our spring fundraiser here at North Country Public Radio. With me is NPR reporter Brian Mann. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Todd. Good morning, Monica. It's so great to be with you and to be invited back to talk about my very favorite public radio station in the country, my hometown station, ncpr.org. And ncpr.org/give is the way to support right now. I'm going to talk for just a minute about why I think you should be part of this, and then we'll get back to the regional news show. You know, I think if you've heard me talk about NCPR over the years, you know how much I love this station, the people who've come in and kept it vital and kept it connected. They're amazing journalists and storytellers, passionate about serving this community. But I also think it's really important to mention that we are part of something in public radio that serves rural America in a unique, very special way. Small towns across the U.S. are struggling to find ways to talk to themselves, to have conversations about their issues, about their culture, about their way of kind of moving forward in this complicated world. And a show like Northern Light, right, that comes on 5 days a week, it's its own magazine of ideas and conversation about our home area. You know, it's not just a show. It really is more important than that. It is really a statement about the importance of this place, the importance of our voices. And you have these amazing journalists going out every day and finding ways to get these voices on the radio, to have civil, factual, deeply researched conversations. I don't think there's anything more important for the health of a community to be able to have real conversations about what's going on, what the future is going to be. And that's why I, every year, I go to ncpr.org/give, or I call 1-877-388-6277. I do what I feel I can. And that's all that's being asked of you right now, is to recognize that you're listening, that you love what you're hearing, that it's kind of fun, joyous place to spend time, but also recognizing the importance. This is a kind of an important thing. And by acting now, by really taking that extra step of becoming a donor and a supporter, you really signal that you think it matters. You're part of it. You're part of the energy and passion for a full year. Do it now, ncpr.org/give, or 1-877-388-6277. Thank you so much.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. A nursing home in North Creek in the southern Adirondacks is teetering on the brink of closure. Elderwood at North Creek has 82 beds. The nursing facility is in serious financial trouble. Amy Fye-Razzle reports.
Yeah, no kidding. On Tuesday night, the town of Johnsburg held its monthly meeting. It was a bit more crowded than usual, with about 40 members of the public sitting in. They were there for the first bullet on the agenda, Elderwood at North Creek. The facility's administrator, Heidi Shemp, stressed that for residents of the nursing home, it's business as usual.
We are not in closure. We are operating as normal. We are providing all the services and quality of care that we need to provide to our residents.
Shemp gave more insight into the inner financial workings of the nursing home, which has struggled with finances for decades now and took a hard hit during COVID-19. She said the stagnant Medicare reimbursement rate is what put them into this hole. It's basically stayed the same since 2007. But to stay open in the short term, she says they need a $2.5 million vital access provider grant from the State Department of Health, which they've applied for and haven't heard back on. That would be their bridge to sustainability, said Director of Nursing Brian Parker.
It's just the right now. It's this moment that we need it for this amount of time.
One audience member asked if the nursing home is doomed to close no matter what happens. Shemp said absolutely not.
We're not asking for the government to just keep paying us, right? So we have goals. We've met and exceeded a lot of our goals already.
Elderwood has received VAP grants in the past, and they require a sustainability plan. Shemp said they've been able to improve Elderwood's bottom line over the last few years by reducing their need for travel in agency nurses. But they're still in trouble, and Shemp said the parent company of Elderwood has been covering their losses, but won't do that forever. If they get a no back about the $2.5 million, she said they would start to close immediately.
We would say we would attempt to discharge no more than a certain amount of people every day, and we would find places for those people to go.
Shemp said they won't abandon anyone, but she also said it could be very hard to find open beds in other nursing homes.
We will make sure that it's safe, it's a safe transition, people are transported, we will help you with paperwork, we will do all the things that we would normally do when we're discharging people, but I cannot guarantee where someone would go.
The mood of the meeting was pretty somber. Among the attendees was Christine Powers. She says everyone knows the pain that a closure would mean.
Where are these residents going to go? Where? Are they going to go to Buffalo? Are they going to go to Westchester? What's going to happen to these families? You know, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Powers owns a local business in town and is on the board of the North Creek Business Alliance.
We're really aware of the business lives and the, you know, the really the havoc and destruction of potentially our community in economic ways.
Chuck Barton, the CEO of the Warren Washington County's Industrial Development Agency, was also there. He said, as the largest employer in town, Elderwood's closure would have devastating business impacts. But he also noted that it's been powerful to see the community rally behind the nursing home.
The room was crowded last night, and there were people from different walks of life.
There were lots of questions about what locals could do, and Shemp said the community's advocacy is helping. The petitions and letters of support, folks calling their representatives.
People we weren't able to talk to before are talking to us. So I can't express to you enough the impact that has had.
Shemp said what's happening in their community is emblematic of a local and a much larger struggle.
We have two things going on here, right? We have immediate crisis mode of closure, and then we have our long-term plan of how are we going to take care of the elderly. And that is bigger than us.
That question looms large as New York's elderly population only grows. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio.
Elderwood at North Creek is hosting an open house on Saturday. That's tomorrow from 2 to 4 in the afternoon. It's asking the community to come meet the staff, residents, and families of the facility, and we'll have a table for writing letters of support.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. And coming up in just a few minutes, John Warren checks the trail conditions for us in the Adirondacks this weekend. That's right here on Northern Light.
Eddie Lawrence is a musician in Moira, one of many that we're highlighting as part of our Underscore project. It's your contribution that supports news, music, the Underscore project, everything you hear on air and online. So make that gift right now, ncpr.org/give, or call us 877-388-6277. Thank you. Northern Light is supported by Adirondack Foundation, the Adirondack Birth to Three Alliance, dedicated to providing all children the best possible start in life, AdirondackBT3.org. And the Aushable River Association, protecting wild brook trout and the cold water streams on which they depend. Learn more at AushableRiver.org.
New York lawmakers have authorized a plan to close up to 5 state prisons in the next 90 days. The legislature started passing parts of the state budget yesterday, almost 3 weeks after it was due. The votes also centered on cracking down on hate crime and illegal cannabis shops. Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Kathy Hochul highlighted steps taken in the budget to reduce retail theft. They include increasing penalties for assaulting a retail worker and closing loopholes in current laws to make it easier to arrest and convict people for the online sale of stolen goods. Hochul says store owners will no longer have to fend off on their own brash and organized criminal networks.
No one wants to walk into a store to find items locked up behind glass windows, or worse, see one of these sprees firsthand. No one wants to see the shops in their neighborhood boarded up because business owners simply say, I can't do this anymore. It's just not working. It's not worth it. Because that threatens the very vitality of these communities, which I will stop at nothing to protect.
The spending plan also creates new powers for local law enforcement to shutter the thousands of illegal marijuana shops now operating in the state. Police will be able to immediately padlock a shop found to be in violation of the state's cannabis laws. Until now, they had to wait until the case wound its way through the courts. The black market outlets have sprung up in recent years as New York legalized the use of adult recreational cannabis, but has been very slow to grant licenses to legitimate retailers. Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, who represents Albany, says the botched rollout of the legal cannabis program has led to the proliferation of the illegal shops.
It's really been a flagrant disregard for the law and hurting those who are legitimately trying to put their life savings in and enter this business in a legitimate way. So very pleased to see that.
The budget also includes stiffer penalties for hate crimes. Assemblywoman Grace Lee, a Democrat from Lower Manhattan and an original sponsor of the provision, praised the move.
We are updating New York's outdated hate crime statute to respond to the severe rise in hate against minority communities, including the Asian, Jewish, Muslim, Black, and LGBTQ+ New Yorkers. There's a long-term corrosive effect when we fail to address hate in our communities.
The budget bill also authorizes the state to close up to 5 state prisons in the next 90 days. Those with prisons in their districts or nearby say the job losses will have a negative economic impact in those communities. Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh is a Republican from Saratoga County.
These prisons are sometimes the only thing in the local economy that's there. The biggest employer for an area. So this is going to be a bitter pill, really, to have up to 5 more closures in on such short notice.
Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat from the Buffalo area, says while she thinks the 90-day notice is too short, she says communities need to look to other means of creating jobs.
Prisons are not supposed to be a job opportunity for people. It's supposed to be a way to reform people who have been convicted of a crime. If you haven't been convicted and you're not in jail, there's no reason to keep them open.
As of late Thursday, a number of key budget bills were not yet completed, including an education spending bill that distributes school aid and the state's financial plan, as well as an affordable housing program. A tentative agreement between Hochul and legislative leaders would include a tax break for real estate developers who build affordable housing, as well as strengthening tenants' rights. The Senate and Assembly plan to remain at the Capitol until Saturday, Saturday, at least, in order to complete the bills and finish getting a budget in place. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
The federal government is giving New York almost $160 million to help families afford energy-efficient upgrades for their homes. The funding comes from the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act. The state will use it to offer home energy rebates to consumers. The rebate program will launch in late spring or summer. It will offer savings of up to $14,000 on upgrades like efficient heat pumps, water heaters, and electric stoves. Those upgrades, in turn, will reduce people's energy bills and reduce the state's greenhouse gas emissions. The program will open up to low-income households first. At least half of the rebates will go to low-income families, then they'll expand to other households. 12 states in total have applied to the Department of Energy to ask for this funding. New York is the first to receive an award.
Police in Clinton County have arrested a man who they say stabbed and killed a woman in a Peru home earlier this week. 27-year-old Kevin Coza of Peru was charged with second-degree murder, fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon, and endangering the welfare of a child. Police found the body of 23-year-old Kristen Remy during a welfare check Wednesday afternoon. They say a preliminary investigation determined she and Coza were involved in an altercation and he stabbed her. Coza allegedly fled the scene and left a child who was there alone in the home. Multiple outlets report Remy was the child's mother. Coza was arraigned and sent to the Clinton County Jail without bail. Police continue to investigate the alleged murder. Anyone with information is asked to call state police at 518-563-3761.
The computer chip company Micron is expected to receive $6.1 billion in federal money to build a $100 billion mega factory north of Syracuse. Micron says it plans to create 50,000 jobs over the next two decades. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called the investment transformational.
We are rebuilding the economy of central New York and all of upstate, one magical microchip at a time.
Schumer says memory chip manufacturing is critical to economic and national security. He says the Micron project will affect economies across the region.
There are going to be so many subcontractors and so many suppliers across upstate New York for this huge investment that just about every region will gain. The federal government is putting its money where its mouth is. America's future will have Syracuse and upstate New York as its beating heart, thanks to the chip award.
Schumer says he hopes Micron will break ground by next year, with the first two plants built in the next 7 or 8 years, and the second two plants built after that. A portion of the funding will also go toward Micron's existing projects in Idaho.
Monday is Earth Day, and over the weekend, communities across the North Country will host cleanup days to celebrate. Tomorrow morning, there'll be cleanups at the Moreau Community Center in South Glens Falls, the Keene Community Center Pavilion, the Malone Rec Park, Plattsburgh Town Hall, and Boonville's Little Village Park. More local cleanups can be found by searching online. The rain's supposed to stop across much of the region tomorrow, so it'll be a perfect day to take in some nature and pick up some trash.
You know those yellow and brown signs you see when you're driving into the Adirondacks, and the signs that hang at state campgrounds, trailheads, and boat launches all around the North Country? Well, they're all made in one place, the DEC Sign Shop in Northville. Emily Russell traveled to the Southern Adirondacks to take a tour.
Our guide today is George Bailey. He's the supervisor here at the DEC Sign Shop. And he begins our tour where the signs begin their journey.
We're coming down here. This is our carpenter shop. So I tell everybody, this is where everything starts here at the DEC office.
Bailey walks past big piles of boards and scraps of wood. He says they try to use as much local lumber here as possible. Say the DEC opens a new boat launch somewhere in the Adirondacks. They'll send an order for a new sign here to get made in Northville.
And then we take and we'll figure out what we're going to need for materials. And this is where everything starts in our sign shop.
Bailey started working here in the mid-80s. He actually grew up across the street. He's been here so long that he measures his tenure against the woodworking tools here.
That saw was here before I got here. And that table saw was here before I got here. And this panel saw came after I was here.
Bailey says this shop makes 1 to 2,000 signs a year. Once each one is cut and sanded, some are hand routed. A router is a kind of power tool that can carve words or letters into wood. Once that's done, the signs are ready for paint. Yeah. That brings us to the next stop on our tour.
This is our paint room. This is where all the painting is done here. We have an ID sign for Luzerne Public Campground right there.
It's been painted brown, and the signs have been routed down with a kind of jagged serration. The letters are stuck on with yellow vinyl. There's a big printer here that produces sheets of vinyl letters and numbers. Andy Licardi is working on a stack of numbered signs to hang at campsites. He starts with a sharp blade.
We cut them out of this big sheet of vinyl. Then we weed out all the vinyl. And they reveal the numbers and the border. Then we tape them up and stick them on a sign.
To make sure the yellow vinyl numbers really stick, Licardi uses a flat-edged tool. He scrapes it up and down across the sign. This part of the shop back here is like a tight-knit factory. Behind Licardi are two people wearing white aprons and yellow gloves. They dip their rollers into a tray of brown paint. Usually they say there'd be music playing back here.
Judy's a bit of a dancer, you know.
And my music keeps me going. Yeah.
Judy Edwards and Colin Capon work here part-time. They paint signs here in the winter. And in the summer, they mow lawns and pick up trash at the local DEC boat launches. Capon and Edwards both say the staff here is great and the gig is good.
It's outdoors in the summer. It's indoors all winter, painting. At least you're doing something. It's not a job where you're sitting down doing nothing. We're busy.
Yeah, it keeps us busy. Keeps us off the streets.
There's something really unique about this place. It's not just that everyone here seems to get along. It feels like they really like what they do. Maybe it's because a lot of the work is still done by hand, though some of it has moved online. The next stop on our tour is a little office near the paint shop.
Emily, this is Patrick. Patrick's hard at work. He's probably working on some layout. What are you doing on the computer there, Pat? Show Emily what you're doing.
Patrick Edwards is working on a campsite map using software to fill in the missing pieces.
I have to make some of these little icons for the map here, and I'm just trying to do that and trying to get it sized right so I can fit it in there somewhere. I'm not really sure where I'm going to put it.
Those icons will show where things like the restrooms and the showers are. They'll then get printed in vinyl and stuck onto the large wooden campsite map. Edwards grew up in Northville. His dad was a supervisor here back in the 80s. Edwards says he's learned a lot over the years from his own supervisor, George Bailey, like what makes a good, effective sign.
Layout and design really matters. It's something you don't really think about a lot, and thankfully George has been here to kind of teach me and train your eye for that sort of thing.
If you think about it, there's a big difference between a good sign and a bad one. A clear, simple, well-designed sign can make sure hikers stay on the trail. They can point people in the right direction for boat launches and canoe carries. The final stop on our tour is a big machine just outside George Bailey's office.
And this here is going to change a lot of what we do.
Bailey is standing by a massive router the size of a ping pong table. It's got blue levers at one end and a large carving device hovering over the middle. It's a machine router, something that Bailey says will change how signs here take shape.
It's going to be like we won't be hand routing this stuff. We won't be hand cutting this stuff. This router should do all that stuff. It should take and do all these serrations on all these boards.
Before you think a machine router will take jobs or make people here obsolete, Bailey says that's just not going to be the case. This is a small shop. The handful of people here do a lot of different jobs. We wrap up the tour in Bailey's office, where a big sign shaped like the Adirondack Park sits. Patrick Edwards spent about a month putting it together. Bailey looks at it and is clearly proud of the work.
To me, that's just a beautiful job. I mean, I hate the fact that it's going to have to leave my office here someday, but Pat did a beautiful job on that. And, you know, when I leave, Pat will be taking over for me, and just like I took over for his dad.
Traditions run deep in the shop. Some will change when the machine router comes online, but a lot will stay the same. Like wooden signs, this shop will likely be around for decades to come. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio, Northville.
You can find photos of the DEC sign shop and the team there at our website, ncpr.org. And while you're there, now is the time to contribute. Go to ncpr.org/give to say these stories, these wonderful feature stories from Emily Russell, this important news reporting from Amy Feireisel, this matters, and I want to support it, and that matters to me. Give now online at ncpr.org/give. Here to join us and tell us more is NPR's Brian Mann. Hey, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Monica. Yeah, that you're so right. I mean, what a surprising, beautiful story that was from Emily. I've hiked the Adirondacks for decades, and I've always known like that there was this one kind of signature image, the way these signs look. But it never even occurred to me to wonder, you know, where those come from and who the craftspeople are who make them. And, you know, for Emily to sort of fill in that blank and say, you know, when you're out hiking, this is what you see, or when you're driving down the road, and it comes from people who pass this along from generation to generation. You know, that is the kind of little discovery that fills in so much of the richness of what it means to be in the North Country. ncpr.org/give is the way to support that kind of storytelling. Also in this show today on Northern Light, you know, you heard Amy Feireisel talking about the retirement nursing home in North Creek. You heard Karen DeWitt talking about prison closures. So, you know, there's this real chemistry of joy moments and outdoor moments and celebration moments. Also, really hard-hitting news at 1-877-388-6277. You support all of that. It's so powerful what these journalists at NCPR put together on a daily basis. They curate all of that for us. They bring it. It's factual. It's deeply researched. It's filled with a joy and love and a connection to our community. And I support that because I can hear it in their voices. I can hear it in their reporting. And I really want you to act and be part of it right now. Support Northern Light. Support what Monica and Todd and the whole team are doing. 1-877-388-6277.
This is North Country Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, we'll hear from John Warren about the trail conditions in the Adirondacks this weekend. Then stick around after the show to find out more about how the Cardinals song works. That's coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Clouds and showers today. Winds out of the south-southeast, 5 to 15 miles per hour. Highs upper 50s, low 60s, lows in the 40s overnight tonight. Looks like chance of some scattered showers again tomorrow. A little cooler, highs 40s near 50 on both Saturday and Sunday and into early next week as well. We'll see a high near 60 on next Tuesday. That's the extended forecast. But today, scattered showers, highs upper 50s, low 60s, and light winds out of the south-southeast. Right now we have clouds, 50 degrees, and John Warren checks the trail conditions for the Adirondacks for the weekend.
On Saturday, sunrise in the high peaks will be at about 6:03 and sunset at about 7:47. More rain is expected today, and combined with snowmelt, will keep rivers and streams high again through the weekend, especially in the high peaks where some stream crossings are likely to be dangerous. Be prepared with alternative routes. This is not a good time to hike Street, Nye, or Allen Mountains. There remains only a few inches of snow at Lake Colton, but conditions vary widely from very muddy to ice to multiple feet of snow in places at higher elevations. Snowshoes are required in places above Avalanche Pass, where snow depths exceed 8 inches. Carry traction devices as well if you're headed to summits. Temperatures there will be in the 20s through the weekend, with wind chills near zero and winds 30 to 40 miles per hour. Skiing and boarding have ended at Whiteface, but Gore Mountain will have one last weekend. They are closing on Sunday. This is one of the few weekends each year when you can get an early morning ski in at Gore and then go whitewater rafting on the Hudson River. The Hudson will be at about 5 feet on the gauge at North Creek without the dam release. The Black River will be running a bit under 6 feet through the weekend. Rafting has also begun for the season there. Over on Lake Champlain, the gauge just north of Whitehall is at about 98.5 feet. The Cobble Hill Trail east of Mirror Lake is now closed on weekdays through May 3rd for trail upgrades. The Adirondack Mountain Reserve reservation system is available again. From May 1st through October 31st, reservations are required to access the AMR parking lot, trailheads, and trails. And bear canisters are now required in the eastern High Peaks Wilderness through November 30th. Bear canisters should be kept 100 feet away from tents, lean-tos, and cooking areas, and used to store all food, garbage, toiletries, or anything with a scent. Now is the time to learn and practice habits to reduce interactions with bears around the Adirondacks. Those are the outdoor conditions in the Adirondacks this weekend. For North Country Public Radio, this is John Warren from the New York Almanac, online at newyorkalmanac.com.
This is Northern Light right here in North Country Public Radio. It's 8:31. I'm Monica Sandreski here with Todd Moe and NPR's Brian Mann here on the last day of our spring fundraiser. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. So great to be with you. Thanks for having me on this morning. On this last day, 1-877-388-6277, ncpr.org/give.
Yes, it's so true. It's so true. That is the way to give. I just think so much of the stories that we heard today, they really connected all these far-flung communities from North Creek to Northville to the trail conditions. Like you said, the prison reporting from Karen DeWitt, issues that, I mean, this really gets to the heart of people's concerns of the folks who live there. And that's what you hear on North Country Public Radio. That's what you get every morning on Northern Light between 8 and 8:30. Give to support at ncpr.org/give.
Yeah, it's so important to support now. And I want to say one other thing. Again, one of the fun parts of getting to step in occasionally is that I get to talk about you guys and kind of love on you a little bit in a way from just a little bit adjacent. And here's one of the things I want to say that's so exciting about NCPR. We're obviously celebrating Todd Moe's retirement coming up soon. His voice will be stepping away from Northern Light and the morning show. And that's part of the process. You know, we old guys move on, which I've done from NCPR. But what's beautiful, and I mean, it's such a joy, is to see the new voices like yours, Monica, that we've all come to love. You get us started in the day with such good energy and joy and information and all the facts and storytelling you bring. And, you know, when I support, and I've supported now since the late 90s, North Country Public Radio, that's part of what I'm really loving now, is that it's not just a moment in time. It's not just one group of reporters or storytellers. You know, we have this long, deep rooted tradition. And so hearing Amy and Emily, hearing you, Monica, this is NCPR. The voices change, but the rootedness and the love for these communities, it remains. And I just want to tell you how, you know, as much as I'm so sad to have Todd stepping away, of course, I'm one of the many people who are, you know, that's going to be hard, really. But I just want you to know how much I love your voice and your ethics and your storytelling. I think this new young crew at NCPR are amazing journalists. And that's why I support. And I want everybody hearing us talk about this. Yes, support today for Todd Moe. Give him a big send-off with your donation, but also think about where it goes forward. This is a great moment. And Monica, I really love how you've kind of shaped the show and shaped the morning. It's wonderful.
Oh, Brian, thank you so much. That means a lot. It's such a tremendous team to be a part of. And yeah, like you said, just like the carrying on, I mean, this isn't like a whole new iteration. It is like a continuation. And I mean, you know, it's always NCPR, even when the voices and people change, because it's so much larger. It's a whole community-wide, region-wide thing of people that have come from like years before and handed off to the current folks. It's really tremendous. Give now to support it at ncpr.org/give or call 877-388-6277. And thanks so much.